Well, I started probably when I just joined the police. I'd been writing poetry, and then it sort of progressed from that, from poetry to lyrics to short stories and trying to write scripts.
But we don't think of policemen writing poetry. We don't think of policemen even writing scripts, with no disrespect to the men in blue. But the idea of poetry, I mean, what's your own background before you went into the police, Harry?
Well, I was actually, I'd left school before I was 15, and I ended up getting a job in a butcher's firm. And like everybody else, we were all looking to get a trade. And I worked there, and I really did very well in it because my brother worked there. He was the second hand.
Hang on a second. Has anybody ever told you you sound very like Billy Connolly?
Only Billy.
Billy Connolly.
No, I'm only kidding. I don't know. Everybody says that, but I think all Scots sound like that from Glasgow.
Well, hang on a second. Before we sort out whether it's actually Billy Connolly with a much trimmed beard sitting opposite me, or it is actually Harry Morris, let me introduce you to folks at home. Hi there. And you come to the author studio and meet your guest this evening. I'm talking on your behalf to Harry Morris about his book, Harry the Polis. Now, it's the fourth in a series. But you haven't read the first, second and third yet, but you will after you've had a wee bit of a peek into number four. Because this is a collection, like the other three were, of stories allegedly all picked up as Harry Morris went about his duty as a policeman. I promise you, they are very, very funny stories. Most of them you wouldn't want to happen to you. You wouldn't want to be involved in them. But for a bloke who spent all of his working life, I mean, how many years, hey?
29 years
as a police. He was on motorbikes too. If you've ever driven a car and had a police motorbike up behind you in Strathclyde. Anyway, we'll get to that in a minute. Can I just say, keep your eye open for Harry the Polis's number four. You're never going to believe it. It's published by Black and White, as we've said before, a very good wee firm in Edinburgh, wee independent firm in Edinburgh, and they were smart enough to snap them up because, and this is hope for everybody who's ever wanted to write a book, Harry published them himself initially because he just wanted to share them. But anyway, enough of that. Harry, what was I saying? Oh, yes. Welcome into the studio tonight.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Alex,
for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I was asking you about a policeman who wrote poetry, and you were working in a butcher's shop, and I said you sounded a bit like Billy Connolly, and you said, well, is that a fact? Kind of thing. Only Billy said, I'm like him. He said that you admitted that was a lie. How did you start to write then?
I just used to write down the wee short stories, and then when I joined the police...
Are you claiming they're all true?
Every one of them.
What a state this country is.
Even the lies are true.
The title of another one, yeah.
So it was a case of... It's a very serious job that you do in the police. So that I found a way of getting through it was to see humour in things. So I would write down the funny things that I saw. And there's a great deal of humour in the police. They're not the stern-faced guy that you see sometimes. They all have a great sense of humour.
Not all. Well, hang on, you're saying them all. Not them all, surely. Because, I mean, no disrespect to folk like Sir David, whom I knew, yes, worked with quite often. Beneath him... and getting towards blokes on the beat, there must be some stuffed shirts.
Well, there's a few, but...
Careful, there's
normally
a pension at
stake
here.
Normally you can get round them, and they can. They do smile sometimes if they get something that's really funny.
Have you never crossed swords with them?
I've crossed swords with Sir Patrick Hamill before, and he was in charge when I got suspended.
Mm-hmm. Well, hang on, you better tell that story.
Well, it was actually a magazine I'd written years ago, and I used to do it because I found the police magazine quite boring. And so I started to write things that I thought would interest each and every other police officer.
A bit formal.
Yeah, I write about each other, the funny things that we do and the silly things that we did, and we laugh at each other, and people thought it was funny. So I would continue doing it. And then I decided I was going to write one for a charity, and I did it for an orphanage, and I did one with all the best bits. And the idea was these two colleagues of mine would sell it around the office and raise money for this charity. We would buy presents and hand them in courtesy of Strathclyde Police to the orphanage. However, somebody in the information or force information got a bit sort of envious and complained about it. And I was suspended for bringing the police into disrepute.
Because you'd told stories that were actually picked up on the process of being a policeman.
Because I more or less told the stories that they didn't really want public to know about. So it was really just humorous things.
So somebody then said somewhere, hello, 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 what's this kind of thing?
Yeah, that was it. So
did you really kick off, Harry? Because, forgive me saying this, it seems to me that this is great hope for anybody who has ever said, I think I could write, I think I'd like to write. Gosh, and there'll be folk at home listening to this programme who'll be saying, isn't that amazing? There's a policeman. All these years, a PC, and now he's burst into print with four books coming out now. I think that you're a great encouragement to all of them. But you began, didn't you, in a writer's club?
Yes, I used to write and do things with an old colleague of yours, Hamish Wilson.
Yeah.
And Hamish was at Clyde at the time. And I used to let Hamish see some of my poems, and also he used to read some of my scripts, and he was very encouraging. He was very encouraging.
But you ended up in the Tron reading out your poetry and all that kind of thing, didn't you?
Ended up in the Tron Theatre. I think it was I don't think it was the fact I was to read my poetry. I think it was the fact it was a free bar that night that I went.
When did you think there was a, and forgive me using the phrase, Harry, a living in this? I mean, to the point where, I mean, Black and White have made a smashing job of publishing your books, and they're going to be great, I think, for anybody who likes a good laugh, likes a good joke. Some of the stories are quite serious too, though.
Yeah, there's quite a few. I like to put the odd serious one in just to let people see that the police isn't as, you know, that there is a serious side to everything.
Example, pluck one out and tell us about it.
Well, I mean, the time when I was only, there was only weeks in the job, and I lived in Renfrew at the time, and I was to go to Castlemilk, and it was to start at 9 o'clock, so to leave at like 7:30. No mobile phones, didn't have a car. So I went down to the Cross at Renfrew to get the bus, which would take me into Glasgow, and then get my corresponding bus from there up to Castlemilk. And while I'm standing in the bus shelter, in uniform, these guys come running round the corner. There's about five of them, and they're all chasing after one youth. So they start to kick him about the face and stuff like that. And people are looking at me. They don't realise I'm not on duty yet, but you're in uniform, so therefore I've got to take part. So I run across to defend this boy and help him. After I'd sorted all that out, I'd missed my bus, so I couldn't phone and say I'm going to be late. I had to wait for the next bus to come along, arrive at the Gorbals, wait there. Along comes a bus which was heaving, and just as I got onto the driver says, thank goodness you're here, Constable, because there's a fight up the stairs. So that was me, and there was three guys up the stairs, and they were all very, very frightening. And when I say the sweat was running down my legs, it was literally running down my legs. But I actually conned them into getting them off the bus, and then we caught them when they got to the terminus.
Now, did you get a rocketing when you eventually got into the policies? Where have you been? Where have you been, Morris?
Yeah, so they didn't allow for buses not coming along, or you missed a bus. The police were always of an attitude that you should be able to leave the office in time to walk it to get to your station. And that was the way it used to be way back in the 70s.
This new one, and we're talking about the fourth one, which is the brand new one. I mean, if anybody's been lucky enough to get a hold of the first three, then, well, fingers crossed they'll pass them on and let folks share them.
Hopefully.
Because the new one has got stories that are real Glasgow. I mean, you say in the front of the book, Glasgow's the home of real patter kind of thing, isn't it? I mean,
yes.
Things happen in Glasgow that don't happen anywhere else. And there's a great wee story right at the start of the book about going up with your partner to visit her dad, who was ill.
Yeah. Her father, yeah, sorry.
And what's your story? Well, make a pot of tea.
Her father was actually, for the last couple of years, suffering from vascular dementia, and he'd ended up in a nursing home, and went up this day to meet him. And while we were there, my wife was fussing over him as normal, and she's saying, Dad, look at your cushions. You need to puff up your cushions. Watch a minute. So she's puffing up his cushions. Sit there, Dad, to tidy your bed. And she's tidying up his bed, and she said, would you like a wee cup of tea, Dad? Would you like a cup of tea and some toast? And he looked at me and he went, yeah, that would be nice. So she says, okay, will I make it in your wee silver teapot? That's your favourite pot. Will I make it in your silver teapot? He went, yeah, okay, hen, but mind and get a good clean out before you put the tea in. She says, how, Dad? What's up with it? He says, well, during the night I use it to pee in instead of making up in the toilet.
Now that's your Glasgow humour for you. All right. I marked another one in here. It's on page 78, in fact. It was about controlling diet, and you were following the Paul McKenna diktat, weren't you?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I was actually trying to stop drinking whiskey that night, and I'd watched Paul McKenna, and he was talking about these sort of things where you've got maybe a phobia, or you want chocolate, or you want Coca-Cola. And I thought to myself, I felt like whiskey, so I thought, well, I'll try Paul's method here. And what you do is you start tapping points in your head and what your way around your face.
And so you just, actually, people can hear this.
You can tap, 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 tap. And you just keep
just
doing
giving myself a belt of a sore
around.
Head.
You, you just keep tapping away. So it says, and just keep tapping until you lose that sort of, you know, that feeling that you want a drink of whiskey or you want a piece of chocolate. And I kept on tapping away, and eventually I had to stop because my face was all bruised. I looked as though I'd been with Mike Tyson for about three rounds.
So what did you do?
I just had a whiskey. It was a lot easier.
I liked also, I'm not going to say I believe this because I don't, the minister called Kevin Flett.
Yes.
Now, you're not telling me that's a true story.
He's a true person. He was a minister in the Baptist church in which I used to be a member of. And his wife was expecting
now,
twins.
Now, before you go on with it, is this a true story?
This is, they're all true, Alec, I've told you.
Even the lies are true, you just said.
Even,
on you
even,
go.
This is even more lies. And he was, his name was Flett, and the older people, he had a sort of young outlook for the church, and the older people didn't sort of take to it right away. So a few of them were asking him exactly, what was you going to call your kids? And he said, well, it was twin daughters he had, so he says, we're going to call them Lee and Pam. And it was about 2 weeks before it clicked with them all that Leaflet and Pamphlet was their names.
But are you swearing, hand on your heart, Bernie, if you're telling me a lie, Harry?
That's what he did.
There'll be lightning coming through this roof here any minute. You do this now, but you've done a lot of other things. You were in a band at one time. In fact, there's another great story in the book about you being in a band.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was actually...
This is the one about the foot being put in it very firmly.
Oh, my foot being put in it?
Yeah, I mean, and chatting up a bloke and finding out if he was a musician himself. You know?
Oh, that was... We were actually doing a charity thing, a fundraiser for this organisation. And after it, I got a letter. It was actually the SNP, a fundraiser thing, and they asked us to perform. And I got a letter from Alex Salmond, who was a leader at the time, and he said to me, if we contact our entertainments manager, Peter Wishart, then he'll tell you if there's any more work available. So I contacted this guy, and I phoned him up, and he answered the phone, and he seemed to know me. And he said, oh, I've been reading great things about your band. You seem to be doing great in Russia, and, you know, you're doing really well. You've been in TV over there. And I said, yeah. And I was quite proud of the fact he knew about it all. And then he said to me, that's a place my band has never played in. We've played all over Europe, but we've never played in Russia. So I said to him, oh, you're in a band. I said, what's the name of your band? He said, Run Rig.
They had a wee bit of a reputation.
Yes, they were well known.
Harry, when you were on the bikes, because you were on the bikes for a while, you did surveillance, and I want to talk to you about that too, because you had a big beard, and I would have thought anybody with a big beard would have been picked out right away by anybody they were trying to shadow. But when you're on the bikes and you were clocking towards your full term, 29 years, did you know then that what you wanted to do was right? I mean, did you think, well, any time now I'm going to hang out my truncheon, or the equivalent, and have to go out? Did you have an idea what you wanted to do when you'd finished?
No, I never really thought about it. I thought I'd maybe be a weightlifter with the amount of equipment now that the police have got to carry. And it was one of these things where I decided that, well, I was that busy with the band and you were touring all the time, that I thought if I put as much time into myself and try to write something, then I could do quite well. But the basic idea originally was just to put my stories all down in a book and have it for myself and for my family. That was it.
So how did you move from there then to publishing them yourself?
Well, actually, I was told that I could only run off something like 200. So I did that.
What does that mean, run off? I mean,
well, run off 200 books.
Where?
Well, I went to a friend of mine, John Downey, at the Dad Bookbinders, and I went to him, seen him about it, and he says, well, OK, they would print it and they would bind it for me. And the idea was that I would do 200, give them away to friends and family and stuff like that. Always easy to get a Christmas present, get rid of them. And I had so many left. So there was an excerpt in one of the local newspapers, and I got 874 phone calls from this excerpt. I mean, the phone was just going all the time. People want the book. So I thought, well, I'll contact Borders. And I contacted Borders Books and asked them if they would be interested in taking the book. I had no ISBN number, I had no barcode, and I told them what the book was about, and I managed to talk them into taking it. and it sold out within a week. Mm-hmm. So then I decided, well,
that was the first one.
I've got a book to go here.
And then, I mean, had you a mountain of notes away in a shoebox at the bottom of a drawer or somewhere? Or?
I did, actually. I did. I kept a lot of notes and wee reminders as I went along. I used to keep all these wee things.
Hold it there. You're really telling me that stories like, well, for example, the one in the book about the bloke who's going to get locked up and his wife turns to a policeman, let's just say, and says something like, would you like some super sex? You're telling me that that's a true story? Because what was the answer?
Well, I took the soup because I was hungry that night.
Because you misheard what she said then, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, yes.
Oh, is that a true story?
That was a true story. It was actually in Castlemill, and at that time they didn't have a pub up there. So most of the people that lived there had to go in the town to get a drink on a Friday or Saturday night. And the problem was they eventually, you know, they would come out of there and cause a disturbance and get the jail. So they get locked up in the city centre. So we had what you called testy address to make sure they weren't given a false address. And you had to go up to the doors at 2 and 3 in the morning, chap the doors, and ask if they stayed here. And then if they did, then you would tell them where their husband was and he was appearing at court in the morning. So that was it. So well, like as Chick Murray says...
Get to the rest of it, though.
Well, she opened the door in her negligee, which was a strange place to have a door, as Chick Murray would say. and so when I told her this, she then sort of loosened her negligee slightly and she said to me, would you like some super sex? And I said, well, it's all right with you, Hen, I'll take the soup.
Because it's the dead of winter, was it? Actually?
Yeah, it was very...
Hang on a sec, Harry. Hi, everybody. If you've just come in, let me just check the time. Yes, you've missed the first 16 minutes of the programme. And your guest this evening on Authors is a bloke whose book you're going to enjoy, whose books, plural, because Harry Morris has just ripped his way into the kind of printing that's black and white do extremely well. When I say ripped, he did his own books initially, but black and white rang him up when they saw them and said, hey, we want to print some of this. So the fourth one is just out. You're never going to believe it, but so are the other three. 1, 2 and 3. Now, I can tell you that I came across Harry on your behalf, 18 months, maybe 2 years ago, certainly over a year ago, when I managed to lay hands on one of his privately printed and bound books. And I got a lot of reaction from you at home. Maybe you rang. But I can tell you this, a lot of folk thoroughly enjoyed it. And when I told Harry, well, I'm not going to say that encouraged him. All I'm going to say is black and white were encouraged to say, come and see us. And the result now is a very, very well put together paperback, which is full of allegedly true stories as they affected the life of a bloke who'd spent 29 years as a PC in Strathclyde Polis. But, as I say, serves you right for coming in late and missing the start of the programme. Harry, when you, as you say, had a lot of these notes and things, did you ever think you were going to get as far as 4 books?
No, I did not, actually. The first two were very easy, and after they got, I got them out, and then the third one just seemed to flow, and it came out very easily. And the thing is, you become, when you're self-publishing, I mean, I tell people, everybody says, oh, I've got a book in me, or oh, I could write that. And I say, well, go ahead, do it. You know, the great thing is, everybody's got a book in them, go for it. But when I go to the third book, you then become a victim of your own success. And you've got to convince shops to take your book. So you have them phoning you up and saying...
Well, wait a minute, hang on. Were you going around hammering on shop doors and saying, please let me in?
Well, I was actually... I would actually phone them up and I used to tell them it was Harry Morris here and I had projected sales of 1.2 million on Amazon. And if I sold half of that, I was changing my name by deed poll to Harry Potter. And I used to just tell them these stories and convince them to take some of my books. I remember going to Autechers, as it was then, in Newton Mearns, and walking around like a wee sheep after this lady that was the manageress and trying to convince her to take my books in that they would sell. So she eventually got fed up with me and says, right, give me 2. And I went, okay. So I went out to my car, got 2, came back in, gave her them. And then before I got home, I picked up my phone when I got in the answer machine. And she says, hey, you were in my shop there. Can you come back up and bring me another 6 of each?
Excellent.
And then it went from there to 30 to 50 of each. And then they ended up doing a launch for me as well.
Do folk tell you stories? Now, because I'm not believing. I don't look that kind of gomless and glake. Don't answer that question. But, I mean, you're not expecting me to believe every single story in here, or are you? Because some of them are. Well, take, for example, Mechanical Trouble. This one's from The Adventures of Harry the Polis. The car that wasn't actually as good as it could have been.
Well, that was actually my brother's car. And he had parked in my driveway and we couldn't get it to start, so we were pushing it out the driveway when my neighbour's daughter drew up and she said to my brother, would you like a jump? And he said, well, no, they knew here, I'm trying to get a car started.
Now, excuse me, Morris. No, I'm talking about the one about Orville. Orville and Harry. Harry's working at the front desk of the office when Orville comes in and slams the car keys down. Thank you for that diversion there, which took us into the kind of neighbours who live around you. Now, I'm thinking about the police officer who wasn't too chuffed at the prospect of driving a car that wasn't as good as it might have been.
Well, he had actually, it was a miserable day, and he came in there and he said, that car, I'm not taking that car out again.
I hope your neighbour comes and knocks on the door.
the brakes are not working right. He said, the wipers are not working right. It's an absolute wreck, and I'm not taking it out again.
This is the wee panda.
This was the wee panda car. So I looked out the window, and it was actually quite sleety starting and getting heavy. And I said to him, well, you know, if you phone over the garage, they might not have a spare. And he says, I don't care. And I said, and if you look outside, it's starting to rain heavy and it's cold and miserable. And he says, give the keys to that car, I'll just take it back out again.
when you oh, that's a clean one, yes, that's a clean one. When you were sitting down to write them, I mean, you're now on, well, this is four, you're at work at number five. And in fact, as soon as Black and White produced it and stuck it in the shops, bingo, somebody was saying to you, when's number five coming along? Have you got a limitless supply of this, Harry Morris? Or do other blokes in the force come to you now and say, hey, Harry, have you got the one about so-and-so?
Yeah, I'm fortunate now that if I do signing sessions, I do still have a lot of ideas and stories in my head that prompt me. And so I just tend to elaborate on them. But I now get, if I do signing sessions, there's more and more cops turning up at these signing sessions. And while they're standing in the queue and I'm signing their book, they tell me a story. And everybody's always got a story they want to tell me now, so it's great. So I'm starting to acknowledge, you know, people that are sort of sending me stories.
Yeah, now, I said to you, Harry, that, you know, it's all very well coming out with book four and book five, and you're never going to believe it is book four, of course. Do you think eventually you're going to branch out into something else? Or having got a niche, which is yours, are you going to continue to develop this? I'm not going to say exploit, but develop it and flesh it out.
Definitely. I mean, the Harry the Polish thing, I would love to take it on stage and move it around theatres.
Hang on. What does that mean, take it on stage?
Well, do the sort of sketches on stage. I mean, talk
to... Strathclyde would murder you. Strathclyde Polis would murder you, standing there in the full uniform doing the bit. Surely, impersonating a police officer is a serious offence.
Yeah, well, some people have done that for years.
Yeah, you just beat me too. I was going to say, you did that for 29 years.
So the idea is, it's actually to show the humour in the police, not to make fun of the police. It's to show the police in a different light from what people are seeing.
Did you send Sir David one, by the way?
Not yet. I'll maybe send his daughter at first.
Uh-huh. He doesn't get stick in this.
No, but there's actually a story I remember, and it was from Dowdle's memoirs, and it was a story then somebody told me years ago.
Get Dowdle's.
That it was David McNee. Yeah. And it was actually a sheriff that gave me the story many years ago, and it was about a man that was stopped for drunk driving. And when you're doing the report, you check their eyes and their clothing and stuff like that, and you put, well, their eyes were glazed, their clothing was dishevelled, their speech was slurred, and this is all pointers towards the drunk driving thing.
That's me coming to work in the morning, not going home.
So what the thing was, he went to court this day, and he went to see Dowdle's originally, and Dowdle said to him, was he sitting talking to him, taking notes, he said to him, can I ask you, is there something up with your eye? And he went, yeah, I've got an artificial eye. And he went, oh, right, okay. He says, well, if I was to ask you to take that out in court, could you take it out very easily? He went, if it's going to help my case, yeah, definitely. So he says, is it easy just to pop it out? He says, it is. He went, right, okay, that's what we'll use as our defence. So they went into court, and the procurator fiscal led the cop, who I believe was David McNee at the time, through his evidence and said, you know, tell me, oh, his speech was slurred, his eyes were glazed, his clothing dishevelled, and like, okay, and we arrested him for drunk driving. So the defence agent, Mr. Dowdles, gets up and he looks up and he says, now you say here his speech was slurred? He went, yes, sir. And his clothing was dishevelled? Yes, sir. And you say his eyes were glazed? Yes, sir. He said, take a look at my client. He said, does my client's eyes look as though they're glazed today in court? So he stood there looking across at the dock and he says, in fact, why don't you step down and have a look? He says, so as McNee went to step down out the, the witness box. He went, better still, stay where you are. And he put his hand out and he says, could I see your one of your eyes a minute? The guy then popped the glass eye out onto a clean handkerchief, handed it to Mr. Dowdles, who handed it up to David McNee. And he said to Sir David, does that eye look glazed to you? To which he said, if you'd like to give me the other one across, I'll compare them.
Good old David McNee, eh?
Yeah, yeah. So he had a great sense of humour.
Do you think there really is going to be a way of life for Harry Morris on the stage? I mean, taking this, like the one-man show, taking this round.
Well, I have done a bit of body doubles. Funny.
Some, forgive me interrupting, Harry, but some of them are a bit risque, and there's room for that. Some of them are downright rude, and a lot of folk will say, I like that sense of humour. Others are the kind of stories that made me feel sorry for the polis, because folk can really be thick as three short planks, not two. The way that, allegedly, you came across them in 29 years.
Yeah.
Are you going to put all of this on stage?
Well, I would love to do the some of the scripts and get the character right for to do it, because I think it's something that could go around the theatres.
You should be talking to Ian Gordon in the Pavilion, surely.
Well, I'll maybe do that in the future. I'm actually writing something at the moment, a book, and it's a novel, and I'm actually writing a script for it at the same time, because I can see it as a sort of future play. Nothing to do with the police, you know, but it's a sort of future thing that I'm looking at. It's hopefully doing things like that and doing an audiobook, because people have asked me about doing an audiobook and telling the stories so that they can just put it into their cassette player or, and listen to it, or CD player, and they hear the stories.
And all of this came really just from doing your job on the motorbike, knocking on the doors and being the policeman for 29 years.
That was it, really. So,
is there a story that you haven't put in any of the four books yet? Maybe you can share with some of the listeners now. I mean, just a wee one that, just between ourselves, we could maybe just let folk hear about. Yeah. What do you think? Is there one there?
I'm trying to think. I'm actually writing at the moment, and I'm just trying to think of a sort of short story which would be ideal for.
Well, just give us a wee flavour of it, that's all. Something that will make them say, I must read more of this.
Well, I'll quickly give you one. It's about two cops, and they attend a call in Govan, and it's a disturbance in the house. And they go to the house, and by the time they get there, the boyfriend is in the house.
Your guest this evening has been Harry Morris. We've been talking about his book, Harry the Polis, published by Black and White. I promise you, it's a great read.